This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Okay, good evening, Rabbi Yisai. Shalom Aleichem, Baruchim Abayim. We continue our Shiurim on Sefer Bereishis, which is once again sponsored by the Zakheim family, by Dr. Zakheim Umishpachta, Le'iloi Nishmas, Rav Shloime Eliezer ben Harav Yaakov Zakheim, and Le'iloi Nishmas, Dr. Zakheim's mother, Rivka Bas Tuvia Halevi. They're Neshama Shavan Aliyah, B'gan Eden, Tehemenu Chasam. She Melitza Yisharm for the whole families, for Simchas Anachas, Ad Bias Goel Tzedek. Tonight's shir is sponsored by Maras Rivka Ozarski in honor of her father's yahrzeit Zayin Cheshvan, B'gan Eden, Tehemenu Chasai, Shbi Yomel Tzedek for his whole family, for Simchas Anachas, B'soros Toivois, Ad Bias Goel Tzedek. Tonight's shir is also sponsored anonymously. The person doesn't want me to say the name, but we'll say, I just have to give him a bracha. So it'll be Mavarech Rabbi Yaakov, but I'm not going to say what country he's in. I'm just going to say he comes from the East. And we're Mavarech him that he should be a source of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's blessing. Ad Bias Goel Tzedek. Okay, we have a very interesting topic tonight. Parshas Lech Lecha. God tells Abraham, Lech Lecha, go. Where? I'll let you know. To the land that I'm going to show you. Ultimately, Hashem lets Abraham know to go. He goes to Eretz Yisrael. But this is sort of the mission statement of the Jew. Lech lecha, go, travel. Travel. And Klal Yisrael has been doing that for the last 3,500 years. We've been on the move. Reb Chaim Volozhiner says there have been 10 major stops along the way since we were exiled from Yerushalayim to Babylon, to Persia, to Syria, to Spain, to Portugal, to Italy, to Germany, to Poland, to Russia, to Ukraine, and then finally to New York. And the United States of America, Reb Chaim says, will be the final stop. But tonight we're going to talk about the subject of traveling. Some people like to travel. We're going to talk about traveling in Jewish thought. And we begin with a very powerful and frightening statement of Rabbi Akiva Eiger.
How did Avram know which direction to go to? Or he could have.
It's interesting. God never gave him any information. The only thing is, he had already been to Eretz Yisrael 5 years earlier. People think that this is the first time Avram ever went to Eretz Yisrael. We learned last year, Parshas Lech Lecha, that Abraham went to Eretz Yisrael at age 70 for the Bris Ben HaBasarim. And then he came back, and God said, get back! So, okay. Rabbi Akiva Eiger, in Parshas B'Halo Yischa, he has a very interesting drush. He says on the Pasuk, V'ha'ish asher hu tahar uvederech lehaya. And a man who's not pure, and on the road he didn't go. Excuse me. V'ha'ish asher hu tahar, and the man who is pure, and on the road he didn't go. So Rabbi Akiva Eiger darshaned, if the man is pure, you know why he's pure? Because he didn't travel. If he stayed home. If you stay home, you're pure. Once he hit the road, there are too many spiritual dangers. You know, it's much easier to be tahar when you're ashrei yoshvei v'secha. Once you go out of the confines of your dalet amos, once you start traveling, you're in big danger. So the guy, he's always makbid on nagel vasser by his bed. Yeah, but what now? What he's supposed to do? He's in a hotel. How is he supposed to do that? The guy always is makbid to wash his hands for bread, not in the bathroom. What are we supposed to do? He's on an airplane, you know? So it's very easy to be medactic, but when you're traveling, it's very, very difficult. So the Torah says, V'ha'ish asher hu tahar, the man is pure. You know why he's pure? Uvederech lehaya, he's not on the move. He's at home. He has the tranquility to have the wherewithal to observe all the minutia of the halacha. And a similar thought, the Maharal of Prague's brother writes in the Sefer HaChaim, that those people who are never at rest, but they're always running after the emptiness of this world, they're always going here, they're always going there to pursue havle olam hazeh. So what do we call people always rotzim? Shrotzim. Shrotzim. Sharot. Why are shrotzim called shrotzim? Sharotzim. They're always running. They're marbe raglayim. They walk a lot. They travel a lot. So it's a simen tuma. That's the introduction. And on the other hand, throughout history, There have been many great Gedolei Yisrael who perhaps the most distinguishing quality that is known about them is their travel. Beginning with Maran Gaon Uzeinu Reb Chaim Yosef David Azulai, the Chida. Now, I have a list of the top 10 people that, if I could, I would like to meet in Jewish history. Chassam Sofer is on my list, okay? Rashi is on my list. Chida is definitely on the list. Definitely top 5. Definitely top 3. Maybe even number 1. To me, he's the most interesting personality in Jewish history. And first of all, he was extremely wise. His midah, his sterling midahs, he looked like an angel of God. He had great humility. And the Chida made 2 major travels. In 1753, he visited 148 cities throughout Europe and Asia. In 1773, he visited 156 cities. Okay? Now, the Chida published a diary of his travels. It's called Ma'agal Taiv. He writes, "I, the young man, have taken to the sea, taken to the desert, to travel throughout the Jewish world on behalf of the residents of Hebron." And basically, what did the Chida do? He was a mashulach. He was a shadar. You know what the word shadar stands for? Shlucha derabanan. He was an agent of the rabbis, and he collected for the yeshivas in Yerushalayim. Now, imagine if someone knocked on your door. Yankel, someone's at the door! Really? Sprintzel, who's there? It's a mashulach. And you come to the door, and the chida is standing there. Okay? I think I would faint. The chida? You know, the chida was a mashulach for the yeshivas of Eretz Yisrael. In 1753, he traveled for 5 years. He went to 148 cities. Now, the chida published a diary called Ma'agal Taiv. The first thing you need to know is, in all probability, the chida never meant it to be published. Because there is information there about people he met that I don't think the chida would want people to know what he wrote about them. But somebody found the diary and published it. I happen to have it in Hebrew. I have it in English. Okay? I think it's available online. It must be over $100 by now. It's a very scholarly translation of the Chida's travels. And they recently published, they're publishing a 2-volume set in Hebrew. This edition is out of this world. It's called Ma'agal Taiv. You open it up. This is this book is about his travels between 1753 and 1758, and the map of the 148 cities that he visited. Okay, but we're talking about, he went from Israel to Gaza, to Cairo, to Alexandria, to Livorno, to Bordeaux, to Paris, to London, to Amsterdam, to Frankfurt, through back to Italy, to through Turkey, to Izmir, Constantinople, Syria, Yafo, back to Yerushalayim. Okay? And this is talking about a time when there were pirates on the seas. And the Chida came face to Anton. He met pirates. Did you ever meet pirates? Not from Pittsburgh. The Chida, went face to face with the pirates of Malta. So it's very interesting. We have to try to understand why did the Chida travel on behalf of the cities of Eretz Yisrael? To the point where the Chida was such a great traveler that he was called Hatayar Hagadol. He was called the Great Traveler. I mean, that's what he's known as. What's amazing is the Chida spoke many languages, which made him uniquely suited for this task. He spoke French, he spoke German, he spoke Italian, he spoke Spanish, he spoke Arabic, he spoke Portuguese, and he spoke Yiddish, which is a Chiddush Noira. How would he know Yiddish? In Israel, they didn't speak Yiddish. How would the Chida know Yiddish? In fact, the Chida, when he met the Noid Bihuda, he asked the Noid Bihuda a question. Noid Bihuda stroked his beard. In the meantime, Mrs. Noid Bihuda chimed in with the answer in Yiddish, and the Noid Bihuda began to translate. He said, "Kfar Purash Mina Isha. I got it already. Okay. I got it. The woman said her piece. I know Yiddish. So the Chida was an expert in many languages. And one of the reasons why the Chida took upon himself to collect money, again, for 11 years. Now, what's amazing is, Chida, we're going to see. Chida loved the Eretz Yisrael with every fiber of his being. He said, "Leman Siyon lo yechesheh, for the sake of Zion, I will not be silent." And he believed, now this is incredible, how many Jews lived in Israel in 1750? 7,000. More Jews learning in the Mir Yeshiva today than Jews were in Israel in 1750. Is that miraculous? There are more Jews learning in the Mir Yeshiva today than Jews in Israel in 1750. And the Chida loved Israel so much that he felt he needed to support the Yishuv of Eretz Yisrael. He felt he needed to give the Zuchus to the B'nai Chutzla Eretz to support the residents of Israel. And whenever somebody would insult the Chida wasn't in pain for his personal plight, but instead he was in pain that Eretz Yisrael was not given the respect that it deserved. And whenever they told the Chida, when he was in France, by the way, in Amsterdam, they respect you greatly, so the Chida said, L'chvoid Eretz Yisrael. There's an amazing tshuva in the Chida, in Tshuvas Yosef Oimetz, Simen Yotes. The Chida was asked about the practice that when you collect money, when these shluchim, these shadarim, would collect money, so you give them $100, what percent do you think ended up back in the yeshiva? So everybody knows, the collectors take a cut. If you don't know that, then I have a bridge to sell you, right? I have actually many bridges I would like to sell you. The collectors for any moisad today, of course, they take a cut. 33%, 40%, 50%, whatever the arrangement is. So I know my father's uncle Zunzai, when somebody comes from a yeshiva, if he knows the collector, he gives them two checks. You give him, if you know the person, you give a modest check to the institution, and you give a nice check to the guy, because this is his parnosa. The poor guy, you know, he's not rolling in the, okay. So the Chida felt that, and people were like, you know, didn't like the fact that the collectors took a cut. So the Chida would say, look, you know how important it is to support the residents of Eretz Yisrael? He quotes the Sifri, living in the land of Israel is equal to 613 mitzvahs. We know that about Talmud Torah, but there, we say that about Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, Shkula Keneged Kol HaMitzvahs. And tefillah in Eretz Yisrael go straight up to Shamayim. In Chutz La'aretz, you know, they analyze it, they scrutinize it. So says the Chida, Bameh Yisratze Eved Hashem, how can a servant of God have the privilege of taking a chelek and living in the Holy Land, and having a chelek in the Torah of the Holy Land, more than supporting the residents who learn Torah in Eretz Yisrael? If you want to have a chelek in Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, in Tiras Eretz Yisrael, how wonderful it is to support the residents of Eretz, then you're greater than them! Because you're facilitating Gadol HaMa'aseh Yosef Min Oisa. So the guy in New York who gives tzedakah to the people learning in Eretz Yisrael is greater than the person learning in Eretz Yisrael. In a certain sense. So the Chida wanted to be mezakeh, the B'nai Chutz La'aretz, in supporting the Torah institutions of the land of Israel, and therefore he spent 11 years of his life. Now, you should know, he didn't just collect money. The Chida visited Kamat every library in Europe. The Bodenheim Library, the Oxford Library, in everywhere. Any major library in Europe, the Chida was there. He memorized manuscripts. And we have many quotes of Rabbeinu Ephraim and the Meiri that the Chida memorized on his various trips. And some of the encounter the Chida writes about visiting the Tower of London and all the major tourist attractions throughout Europe are documented in the Sefer Magal Tov. In any event, there's another legend why the Chida was always traveling. Now, by the way, you know that the Rav Aaron Cutler would say, why are Rosh Hashivas always traveling? Because they give shiurim. When you give shiur, there's always a guy in center field. He's going to ask a ridiculous question. And the rabbi might say something that's a little embarrassing to him. And embarrassing someone publicly is like killing them. And when you kill someone, you got to go into galus. So the fate of Rabbanim who teach Torah is, they need a little kapara. That's what Rabbi Aaron said, why God arranges it, that the Rosh Yeshiva are traveling. Okay. This is the legend about the Chida. It was the year 1753. The Chida was a student of the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh. By the way, the Chida, he loved Israel so much, but in his second travels in 1773 to 1778, he stopped off in Livorno, and he never left. A man who loves Israel so much, he moves to Livorno. He died in Livorno. He's buried in Livorno. Rabbi Mordechai Eliyahu, I think in the 50s or the 60s, they brought up his remains to Har Menuchais. That's because the Chida, more than anything, loved to publish Svarim. And to publish Svarim, you need two things. You need a printing press, and you need sponsors. And Livorno had both of them. His press and his sponsors were in Italy. And that's where the Chida spent the rest of his life. The legend has it that the Chida was also a student of the Rashash, Rav Shalom Sharabi, the great Mekubal. And in 1753, the Rashash gathered his two primary disciples, the Chida and Rav Chaim de la Rosa. And he said, it's time for Mashiach to come. We're going to fast. We're going to make tikkunim, yichudim, tevilois in the mikvah, kavanois, tzirufei shemois, and we're going to force the envelope. We're going to bring the Mashiach. So for 3 weeks, they fasted, they contemplated, they meditated, they purified, and all of a sudden a heavenly voice calls out, "Who, my dear, cherished children, how dare you push the envelope before the right time? It's not the right time yet. It's not the time for Mashiach. Because you push the envelope, I decree upon you death and exile and you can't study anymore." And now these three sages had to make a geirul, who gets what punishment. And the Chida got exile. And the next morning, he left Israel. So the legend has it that the Chida left, and this was his heavenly mission for participating in the program of the Rashash to try to bring the Mashiach. What happened to the Rashash? What happened to Reb Chaim de la Rosa? Check out TorahAnyTime.com at the grave of the Rashash and the grave of Reb Chaim de la Rosa on Har HaZesim. You'll see the rest of the story. Also, I don't remember right now. Okay. I'll have to check it out also. But that's what happened to the Chida. Another legend is that when the Chida, and by the way, this comes from the Sefer Oyroi Shel Olam, this is a biography on the Chida. I thank my friend Reb Nosson Wadler for getting me this Sefer in the special Sephardi Sfarim store in the heart of Yerushalayim. And here it brings another legend that when the Chida was a young man, he was so holy, so pure, he was elevating himself so much that his father had a dream that the dark side was after his son, the Sitra Achra, and you better get your son out of Jerusalem because he's really agitating the Sitra Achra. And his father told the Chida, get out of Jerusalem, and the Chida went to Hebron, and ultimately he left Eretz Yisrael. So that's the story of the Chida. Chida is one of the most fascinating personalities of all time. I mean, the Chida wrote bibliography, he wrote Al HaTorah, he wrote on Nevi'im, he wrote on Ksuvim, he wrote on Shulchan Aruch, Sha'al Setshuvas, Sha'as Agarata. You name the subject, the Chida has a Sefer on it. And what's interesting is the Chida writes in his Sefer Avodas HaKodesh, a line that really captures his whole life. He says, "Mi she'enoy ma'abid hazman, yesh zman lakoil." Someone who doesn't waste time, there's time for everything. So he is traveler number one. Now we go to traveler number two. Traveler number two was probably the first great rabbinic figure to be known as a traveler. We don't really know his name even. His name is called Rav Ashtoyre HaParchi. He was a provincial scholar from Provence. He was born in 1282 in Florence, in Spain. And therefore, Floranza, he's called HaParchi, the flower. He was Nifter in Eretz Yisrael in 1357. It was very rare for someone to make Aliyah in the 13th century. It was unheard of. Who goes to Eretz Yisrael in the 13th century? His name, we don't know his name really. Some say his name was Yitzchak. Probably the word Eshtore is Ish Tayre, the man who travels. That was probably some kind of pseudonym. We don't know his actual name. He was a Rishon. He learned from his father. He wrote a Sefer Kaftar Vaferach. Okay? Three-volume Sefer. This gentleman from the Chassam Sofer knows about this. He heard about it. Okay. Three volumes. We're going to see what this is on. This is a fascinating Sefer, one of the great Sfarim of the Rishonim. He learned from his father, then from his grandfather in Tranquatel. And his main Rebbe was Reb Lezer Reb Yosef, who was killed at Kiddush Hashem in 1322. At 19 years old, he went to Montpellier. There he learned from a relative, Yaakov, Reb Yaakov ben Machir, and then he became a student of the Rush. Now, what's the Rush doing in Spain? Because they were trying to kill him in Germany. After the Maharal Meir Rotenberg was imprisoned, and Maharal Meir Rotenberg died in jail, and the Rush tried to redeem Maharal Meir Rotenberg, and Maharal Meir Rotenberg died in jail, the Rush figured, okay, now they're after me next. So the Rush had to run away to Spain. Now the Rush comes to Spain, Ashkenazi rabbi in Sephardic community. That's actually, it usually works. Sephardim love Ashkenazic rabbis. The only thing is they don't accept their custom. So the Rush tried to impose Minog Ashkenaz on the Sephardim, and they loved him, but it didn't go. That didn't work. Anyway, so Ashtori HaParchi became a student of the Rush, and he decided in 1312 that he's going to go to Eretz Yisrael. I mean, who goes to Israel in 1312? Nobody does that. It's not like, you know, he opened up the paper, oh, there's a new building going up in Israel, and if you pay $1 million, then you have the right to bid on the building along with, you know, you can make a bid on the building. You might not get anything. You might just be giving them $1 million. No, I mean, it wasn't settled. It wasn't developed. And in 1312, he went through Cairo. In Cairo, he meets the grandson of the Rambam, Rav Shmuel Hanogid, who wanted him to stay in Cairo. He did not stay. Instead, he comes to Eretz Yisrael, he comes to Yerushalayim. And what's he doing in Yerushalayim? He begins to do scientific, investigative research about the topography of the land of Israel. How long is it? How wide is it? How tall are its mountains? How big is Yerushalayim? The problem is he gets to Jerusalem, and there's a big machlekes. Pro-Rambam, anti-Rambam. This is a waste of time. I'm going to get involved in machlekes. He leaves Yerushalayim. He goes to Beit Sha'an. And he spends 7 years there in his scientific investigative research. He spends 5 years in the Galilee, 2 years in the rest of, 2 years in the Galilee, 5 years in the rest of Israel. And in 1322, he prepares his sefer, Kaftar Vaferach, three volumes about the dimensions, length, the breadth, the width, height, weather of the land of Israel. Halacha l'maisa. What's Eretz Yisrael halacha l'maisa? What's not? Now, he had a very unique shita. He very much opposed. Many people had an opinion that, okay, if you're not chayv in Trumas HaMaisrois, it doesn't have Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. He said, no, we need to expand Israel as large as possible. Anytime you can make a case, this city is part of the land, we need to bring it into the land. He says, Kedushas Ha'aretz and Mitzvos HaTzulius Ba'aretz are not dependent on each other. So you could have many cities that are not chayv in Trumas HaMaisrois because it was not conquered in the times of Ezra, but it still has Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. So his approach was to expand the boundaries and the borders of Eretz Yisrael as wide as possible. And then he was very involved in investigating the Har HaBayis. Where was the Chatzer? Where was the Makam HaMikdash? Where was the Kodesh HaKodesh? Where can you go? Where can't you go?
He didn't need permission to go.
What?
He didn't need permission to go up?
Not then. By the way, a lot of the halachas that we have today of where certain things, where was the Heichal, where was the Chayil, where was the Azara, Sefer Kaftar Vaferach. And he talks about the Kedushas HaMikdash and the Mishkan and the Kelim and the significance of the dimensions of the Kelim. This is all in Sefer Kaftar Vaferach. Now, so this is Rabbi Ashturi HaParchi. Some say he, in all likelihood, he was killed. After he wrote his book, he continued his research. Now, here's an interesting thing. There was another Jewish traveler before Rabbi Shturi HaParchi. His name was Benjamin of Tudela. Benjamin of Toledo. Jews always love to take the name of the city and to just twist it around, right? So we throughout Tanakh we do that. We come to a city and we give it a little twist. So he was from Toledo, Benjamin of Tudela. He was from Navari, and he was probably the most interesting traveler of all, although we know nothing about him. His travels began approximately in the year 1173. And the thing about him was, he wasn't doing any scientific or investigative research. He just traveled the proven, trodden roads. He just took the Derech HaMelech. He took the main highways. Now, the main highways were through a rainforest or through a forest. But Rabbi Shturi HaParchi actually, went out on his own into the forests, and he went out into the wilderness without a guide, not on regular roads, to see where Eretz Yisrael was. Benjamin of Tudela just took the main roads, and he reported about the civilizations that he met, the people that he met, the cultures that he encountered. But Benjamin of Tudela did not just go to the land of Israel. He went to almost every single country in the known world. He started off in France, then to Italy, then to Greece, then to the Levant. Who knows what the Levant is? Yeah, Lebanon, Jordan, the Middle East. Turkey, Syria, Israel, Babylon, Persia, Tibet, India, China, Yemen, Egypt. I mean, he went all over the world. And he writes about all the various cultures and civilizations. So actually, Benjamin of Tudela was not writing a halachic work like Rabbi Shturi HaParchi. He was writing a work of general interest. And secular scholars study Benjamin to learn about the ancient civilizations. Now, what was his motivation? Nobody knows. Some say he was a businessman. Some say he was collecting money for the yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael. Or maybe it's the same thing. However, in the Sefer Toldos Yisrael, I don't know, this sounds like conjecture, they say that maybe Benjamin Tudela had some kind of messianic hope that in the course of his travels he would meet people who would help him out and would advise him how to expedite the redemption. Be it as it may, his travels are very different than, let's say, the Chidah. The Chidah traveled to collect money for Eretz Yisrael, to learn from manuscripts that were not available anywhere else in the world, and to publish a Sfarim. Rav Shturi HaParchi traveled to be able to learn the halachas of Eretz Yisrael. In fact, some say the word tayar comes from the word Torah. In fact, Rav Levi Yitzchak Barditchev says, V'yasuru es Eretz Kanan, but certainly the Chidah's travels emanated from his inquenchable thirst for knowledge. Okay, the final traveler that we're going to discuss tonight, I have a picture of him on your sheets. We once spoke about him in the past. Isaac, maybe put on the groups when we spoke about this. I don't know. We definitely spoke about this. We spoke about this individual. Rabbi Yehosef Schwartz. This is his self-portrait. Okay? He was born in 1804. He was a great tzaddik. He was born in Germany. His father was a renowned Rav. At 14 years old, he went to the seminar in Germany. He graduated at 17. He entered the Beis Medrash in Reitzberg. After 5 years, he began to dedicate himself to studying the halachos of Eretz Yisrael and anything connected to Eretz Yisrael. 1829, he published the first maps of Eretz Yisrael. And he then told his family, Marav Raboisai, I'm out of here. I'm moving to the land of Israel. Nobody moved to Israel in 1820, that's for sure. Maybe in the 14th century, you have a better shot of moving to Israel than in the 19th century, in the early 19th century. And he came down with some kind of machla, cholera, and he got stuck at the border in Hungary, in Italy, and finally he arrives in April 1833. He comes to Yafo. There are no Jews in Yafo in 1833. He finally gets to Jerusalem. He's an Ashkenazic young man in Jerusalem. Jerusalem was completely Sephardic. There were no Ashkenazim in Jerusalem. So what do you do if you're a Sephardi, you're Ashkenazi in a Sephardic land? You become Sephardi, right? You know, there was a great rabbi named Reb Chaim Noah. So he took a shteller in Ukraine or in Russia by Bukharians. And he changed his name. He changed his last name to Mendeleev. Why? Because when you're a rabbi of Sephardim, you become Sephardi. He changed his last name. So that's what Rabbi Yehoshua Schwartz did. He put on Sephardic garb. He married a girl, I believe she was a very young girl, as a minhag Sephardim. Maybe she was, I don't want to say, but she was quite young. If I'm not mistaken, we have a very chashuva rabbi in the neighborhood. Either he's a descendant or a closely related rabbi, Rabag, comes from Rabbi Yosef Schwartz. And he then dedicated himself to study the topography of the land of Israel. He went up to mountains thousands of times to determine the exact moment of Alois HaShachar, Netzachama, and Shkia. The problem is, it's very hard to find a minyan. When you're, let's say, climbing up, you know, Carmel, or climbing a mountain in the north of Israel, it's very hard to find a minyan there, considering the fact there probably aren't 10 people within 50 square miles. So he wasn't able to down with the minyan, and later in life, he fasted a tainus for every time he missed Kriyas HaTorah B'Tzibor. He was a very big tzaddik, very righteous. If I'm not mistaken, he traveled to America. Why did he travel to America? He wanted to determine when is the correct location to say Baruch Atah Hashem Elohim Asher Asas Hayam HaGadol. Do you make it in the Atlantic? Do you make it by the Strait of Gibraltar, where the Atlantic Ocean meets the Mediterranean Sea? That's what many people say is the best spot to make. If I'm not mistaken, he met a rabbi in Philadelphia. Now, there were no rabbis in America at the time, but there was someone who was a reverend. Reverend Isaac Leeser. You ever hear of Reverend Isaac Leeser?
Yes.
He wrote the first English translation of the Bible. Actually, it was just up for auction. Rabbi Isaac Leeser. When I went to Philadelphia during COVID, I was bottlenecked up here, so I went to Philadelphia, and I visited his shul. And in Rabbi Isaac Leeser's shul, they gave me the key to the ancient cemetery, and I visited his kever in Philadelphia. Isaac Leeser met Rabbi Yehoshua Schwartz. He was so impressed with him. Isaac Leeser translated Yehoshua Schwartz's Sefer into English. This is a Sefer in Hebrew. I think Gedalia Schwartz, no relation to Rabbi Yehoshua Schwartz, got this for me. I think so. In it, this is all about the topography of the land of Israel. And really, he dedicated his life to studying the plants of Israel, the animals of Israel, and anything connected to the Holy Land. So here we have probably the four most renowned Jewish travelers of all time. You have the Chida, you have Rav Ashuri HaParchi, you have Benjamin of Todila, and Rabbi Yehoshua Schwartz. Certainly there were more. I just want to end with one last thought about travel. The Talmud Devarah in Perek Tes. He writes regarding the mystical sphira of Malchus. He says that if somebody wants to become the Merkava to the Shechina, to put yourself in Galus. You know, the Gra exiled himself for a certain amount of time where he went incognito from community to community. He went into Galus. And the Talmud Devarah writes, one should imagine about himself, I'm in Galus, and at least when I'm in Galus, I have my suitcase, I have my clothing. But when the Shechina is in Galus, the Shechina doesn't even have its Kalim. And therefore, when you go into Galus, take as little as possible and humble your heart and connect yourself to the Torah, and then the Shechina will be upon you. Like Reb Shimon bar Yochai went into Galus. When you go into Galus, you become the Merkava to the Shechina. Now we know Rashi writes, Ha'avois, Hein, Hein, HaMerkava. The Avos were the chariot of God's presence. And certainly the Avos, they were always on the go. Avraham, he comes to Eretz Yisrael, and as soon as he gets there, there's hunger, he has to go to Egypt. And Yitzchak is Vayogar, he's only a ger, he's only a sojourner. And Yaakovinu was always on the run, and perhaps that was an element of how the Avos HaKadoshim were Merkava L'Shechina. So, as we mentioned, in general, my grandfather, Zechitzak Levracha, would always say, Ashrei Yoshvei Veisecha. Happy is one who sits in his home. When you're home, you could observe the halacha in a controlled environment, as they say. You know, you're in control of the environment, and you could observe to the best of your ability. Once you're on the road, as we saw from Rabbi Akiva Eger, v'ha'ish asher hu tahar uvedarach lehaya. However, there were a number of great people who had made very great contributions to the Jewish people, specifically through their mitzvah of Lech Lecha. Now, it's interesting, I'll end with this. Rav Moshe Feinstein says, this is brought in a new sefer that they published in Rav Moshe, that in life, sometimes you got to go to different places. You know, sometimes you got to go to a dinner you're not interested in going to, simcha you're not interested in going to, bad occasion you're not, you know, sometimes you got to go places. But wherever you need to go, and that's the Ratzon of Hashem, you should imagine in your mind that the Ribbono Shel Olam coming to you, he's giving you a mitzvah, he's telling you, Lech Lecha, go! And then when you execute that mission, so it's not just you're going somewhere, but you're heeding the call of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and the Ribbono Shel Olam is sending you there, and by going there, it will be Lecha, it will be so Hashem could reward you and bless you and give you all the great blessings like Hashem did to Avraham Avinu. Okay, Marv Rabbeinu, thank you very much for coming this evening. Have a wonderful night. Thank you. Kol Tov.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.